Paranormal, Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with Mr. Gavin Kelly from Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown. Welcome, Gavin. How are we doing?
Got somebody sitting next to me.
Oh, yep, Paula. I didn't know Paula was going to be with you or not. Paula Purcell is actually Mr. Gavin Kelly's partner in Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown. They do virtually everything together. It's a wonderful show. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty decent. I don't know how well my voice is going to hold out tonight.
Well, it's that time of year, Paula. Trust me, I know. I've been fighting a cold all week.
Yeah, we heard you cough a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I try to avoid it when I'm on air, but unfortunately, this weather change is going a little freaky with everybody, I think. Everybody's catching a little bit of something. So, well, guys, I mean, I usually start with the basics on telling me how you got into it, but we've known each other for a number of years, and I'm sure most of the listeners probably know how you got into it. But if you have anything you want to share, you're welcome to do that, and then we'll just talk about what you're doing soon.
I got into it basically because of Paula having a house fire, and something uprooted during that time. So she started experiencing some strange activity that was going on in her house. And, of course, we were best friends then. And she explained to me what was going on. But prior to that, I was just, searching through the web, but the TV, just trying to find something I can watch because, you know, my attention span is about the size of a gnat. So I came across Ghost Adventures. So basically, I just started watching that, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. So when she told me what she was experiencing, I was like, that just sounds similar to what I'm watching on TV. So basically told me what was going on. They had issues where there was a ball that would bounce down the hallway, and everybody opened up the doors and kind of peered on out in the hallway going, what the heck was that? Her brother-in-law got up off the couch and kind of leaned on over like, they had old lady perfume that would start from the kitchen, work its way all the way down the hallway, and then dissipate. Her keys, she would actually go ahead and put them down like maybe in a living room. They end up in the dining room, put them in her daughter's room, and ends up in the kitchen. So things were getting moved around constantly.
TV channels got changed.
We'll explain that one.
Oh, that one was funny. My ex-brother-in-law is a favorable NASCAR fan, and he had gotten up, went to the kitchen, which is a long hallway from the living room to the kitchen, because I live in a house that's officially over 100 years old, and he came back, and it was on Westerns on a complete different channel.
I think you got the story swapped. He was watching a Western, and it switched over to NASCAR.
And vice versa. All I know is one channel, he got ticked off because he thought someone was playing with him on the thing, and the deal is the kids weren't even home, and I was in my room doing my thing, and he was in the living room. He's like, who changed my channel? And I'm like, nobody's been there to change your channel. He goes, well, someone has messed with my TV, and they even turned the volume all the way up.
Yeah. So I basically contacted Aaron Goodwin, and to make a long story short, he kind of was my mentor. He told me what I needed to do, what I needed to get, and we just basically investigated her house, and I put it together in like a peer review format where people could actually watch the video and say, hey, that was pretty cool what you got, or yeah, I don't believe that, or whatever. We were contacted by a producer from an independent network in South Haven, Mississippi. And he was like, I just got done watching your video on YouTube, and I just got to say, I truly love it. You guys are not like all the other shows that are out there, and even the web series. He goes, you guys were constantly on the move. You were going from different places. Like, how long have you been doing this? That was our first one. So, needless to say, He's like, I want to sign you to my network. And I'm like, okay, what do you want from us? He goes, I want episodes. I want you to give me more of what you just did.
Okay.
So we signed with him, and I gave him 13 episodes. And originally back then, our show was called The Phantasmic Ghost Hunters. And we gave him his network, 40,000-plus viewers, just with 13 episodes. And it was really phenomenal. Amazon caught wind of it. We had to do a few changes here and there, a couple crew changes, and we changed the name to The Paranormal Journey to the Unknown. And we've been with Amazon ever since. So this is probably our fourth year. We released the first season October 31st of last year, and it did phenomenally well. I mean, not bad for, you know, a nobody that nobody knows, but we've been with them ever since. Season two is supposed to be coming out, hopefully. We're shooting for March of 2019, and I don't care what Joe said. We're going to release season three October 31st of 2019, but tomorrow we are heading out to start filming season four.
And you've got a couple of changes in season four, to my understanding, too. You changed a few cast members for filming, because that happens every now and then. It's not anything that anybody does wrong. It's just when you start advancing, people go different ways, and then you change cast members or you change filming and so forth. But four seasons is something to be proud of when you're dealing with especially a streamlined project, because it's similar to what you said. Attention spans don't really last very long when you're streaming something. You know, you can always come back. So if you can get, you know, 20 or 30% of the viewers to stick, you're doing something right. And it's a whole different ballgame, I think, than what people are used to. YouTube is just kind of a shot in the dark. They either watch it or they don't. You get into streamlined situations, it becomes a known shot in the dark, so to speak. It's one of those things where everybody can just pick and choose what they want to see when they want to see it. So they know they can come back and watch it anytime. It's not like live TV. Live TV, if you miss it, you didn't record it, you're kind of screwed until it reruns.
Yep, pretty much. Or you can go to YouTube and try to search for it.
Yeah, it's actually, you guys, I mean, you've evolved a lot. Your first season, you were learning a lot. Your second season, you started to adapt a lot. I'm sure you probably changed a lot during the third season that you're going to release. And while you're filming the fourth season, you probably have a game plan to change things even more. It's one of those things that many, many people don't understand. When you're starting a project and you don't really, especially if you've never really been into film before, you've never really had a full career at it, you haven't taken film study your whole life, you kind of got to get a feel for it. And most TV shows, the first 2 years is getting that feel, even when you write a script. And reality TV, there's no script involved, so that makes it even tougher.
Oh yeah, our show is completely unstaged, unscripted. One of the things in season two, we actually started toward the very end of season two. Actually, was it season two or season three? We jumped into 4K. Remember? Season three, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, we started in season three, shooting the entire series in 4K. So season four, we're continuing shooting in 4K, but one and two would basically, there was a 4K camera involved, but other than that, it was, you know, 2K.
Well, 4K is, it takes a lot of memory and a lot of work and a lot of editing to get used to 4K. Yet most of our stuff is not 4K that we're doing right now. I mean, I have some pieces that are going to be 4K, but it just takes up so much memory on a hard drive, and then you have to have the right programs to edit it. And it's a beautiful image, but 1080p and 2K seem to be a lot more economical.
Yeah, at least I don't have to worry about the editing process, because we have two guys out in L.A. and they are taking over for that, so they're doing all the editing. So I don't have to see it. I mean, I can help out to say, you know, yeah, I kind of like that there, and let's do some color grading on this. And I mean, I have creative control over my show, of course, but they're the ones doing the editing.
That actually works to your advantage, though. I know we've talked about that several times, but the bigger you grow, when people start this, they do the editing, they do the filming, they do everything. But what you learn is it's hard to keep the project running when it's just you and one other person, and one of you's got to spend most of the time behind the computer to pull out content on time. But when you've got an editing department and a production company that works behind you that does all that work, it kind of takes that stress off of you. So now you can just do what you enjoy doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes it a lot easier. We don't have that much. That chip has been lifted off our shoulder, so we can actually concentrate on other stuff. Hey, your phone's ringing.
Yeah, you got to love my my systems. I've got it shut off, and it still rings through. We got some callers that may call in. It's at Donald's discretion a lot of times when they call in or not, but I did leave the phone lines open in case people had questions for you, so he's welcome as long as he feels comfortable with it to let us know when callers call in. In the meantime, let's talk a little bit about some of your journeys, where you've been, some of your more interesting situations that you ran into, and kind of let the listeners get a feel for who Gavin and Paula are.
All right. Well, we've basically for season two, our locations we've already been is the Hartford City Jail and Speakeasy in Hartford City, Indiana. We went to the Crime and Punishment Museum in Ashburn, Georgia. We've been to the Malvern Manor in Malvern, Iowa. The Weldon Manor in Central City, Kentucky. The U.S. Marine Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Franklin County Jail in Benton, Illinois, the Tillman House in Paducah, Kentucky, and the famed Hinsdale House in Hinsdale, New York. So that's basically season two right there. And the place that we went on season three was Posttown Elementary School in Middleton, Ohio. Let's see, Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio. We did a location that was on the top of the Trail of Tears. So I really don't know the location name of that one, but it was on Trail of Tears. We did Waverly Hills Sanatorium. We did 101, which is in Winchester, Indiana, also called the Para Cafe. We did Benton Farms in Walton, Kentucky. We did the Farrar Elementary School in Maxwell, Iowa. And that's basically it for season three. Woo! Season three. So, and of course, I can't go into season four because those are already booked. We're not going to name them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you got to leave some suspense for the audience.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there's some that didn't make it to episodes. One of those is the Queen Mary in Long Beach, California. There's a few that didn't quite make it. Because, you know, if we don't get anything, like literally don't get anything, then we just skip on to the next one. We're not going to sit there and, I mean, when people watch the episode, they're like, God dang, man, they get evidence every single time. It's not like that. We may have locations where we don't get diddly squat. We skip over it. We put the episodes together are the ones that actually had activity and evidence.
Plus also some of these locations that we have went to that we have not received or did anything that was high quality of evidence to make an episode out of. We have rebooked and we're going to take a second try at it. One of those locations are this weekend.
Yeah, well, there was an issue with that hurricane that took out one of our servers in Texas. So all of our files, half of them are gone. So we have to go back and redo our interviews and get the B-roll and stuff like that. But the investigation stuff is still there. But since we're going to go back, we might as well just go ahead and do an investigation again. And we'll put them both together. Makes sense to me.
You know, that's something I don't think that people realize a lot of times, and that happens all the way up the chain. I know you're not the only show that's done that. I know for a fact Ghost Hunters has done that. I'm pretty sure Ghost Adventures and all the other major shows have done that somewhere along the line. The reality is when you're out there, sometimes you just simply don't get enough to put together good entertainment.
Right.
And you want to be as real as possible, especially on your show. You want to be as real as possible when you're putting things out there. So, you know, if you've got absolutely nothing but a bunch of boring footage, I guess you could say, and sitting around all night, it's not going to make good TV.
thing is, we're actually going to go ahead and save those ones, and we're going to turn those into history programs. Basically, we're going to put it together where people can actually learn about the location. They can learn about the history of it, the tragedies that occurred there, because there's going to be no evidence, but it's going to be a learning experience for the viewers.
Well, yeah, it makes a good story. Even history is a great thing to watch, and I'm a big history buff, and a lot of it, what I'm putting together on my end is documentaries that cover history aspects, the paranormal community, and so forth. So I think it would be good TV, actually, to sit down and watch why somebody thinks that the place is haunted, to get the full history about it, to get the interviews from the people behind the scenes. You know, it's just, it's a good entertaining aspect that most people don't do these days.
But it has to be for dedicated people that are really into history and history buffs, because other people, they may have the attention the size of a gnat too.
Yep, it's all in how you present it, how you put it together, what you cover during the process. Sometimes you can have the attention span of an absolute, I hate to say it, but an absolute idiot. And sometimes on some shows I do, especially if it's a dramatic love story, I have the attention span of about 2.5 seconds. But if you give me some good film work with that, some good editing with that, some good music in the background, and a decent story, it'll capture me every time. There's a lot of things that you see on the History Channel and on the Discovery Channel that I sit all the way through it, and it would bore the crap out of other people.
The thing is with me, and this is generally for everything I watch, if I am not captivated in the first 3.5 minutes, I go to something else. It's just the way it is.
Well, it's the way marketing is. Marketing, you're taught, actually, that you have about a 5-minute capture time in everything that you do, whether it's a sales pitch, whether it's a presentation on stage, whether it's a commercial, whatever you're doing, you have about 5 minutes to capture the person's attention. If you can't do it in 5 minutes, you've already lost the game.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Most definitely.
Yeah, I know that the weather's getting to all of us, I think, just a little bit. So you guys have worked with a lot of different equipment. You've worked with a lot of different stuff out there. You work with a lot of different applications. What exactly is your, I guess I could say, your favorite thing to use?
I don't know. Things just keep on changing as we progressively go through filming different episodes. My newest thing is when we went to the Farrar, the Devil Jersey box, that actually played an entire basketball game, a phantom basketball game. And I picked it up and carried it into the gymnasium, and it still played. The investigator that we invited with us, Craig Nearing, he said that when he was there with his group, they were sleeping above the gymnasium. And around 11:30 at night, they were woke up by the sound, a sound of a basketball game. So they quickly jump up, run down to the gymnasium, thinking that somebody broke in, was playing basketball. When they got down there, it stopped. For us, it stayed and kept going. We heard what sounds like people running up and down the bleachers. You can hear the buzzer, the announcer, the slam dunks, the squeaking of the sneakers on the floor. It was truly amazing. So I would say that is my favorite. But although I also have the ghost helmet too, and that one's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's probably a prime example of residual activity, because I'm assuming that that was a school that you guys were in. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was elementary school.
I would bet all of that residual activity and all those games it played so many years, it's no surprise that you would actually hear something like that and not be able to place it.
True.
Because schools are very active. That's something I think a lot of people don't really catch on to. A young kid, Colin, that was on my show about a year ago, he concentrates a lot on that because he grew up and went through a high school, and his first investigation was at his own high school. And then he's been traveling around all over the place doing schools and museums and things that are consistently active to try to kind of prove to people that, hey, look, you know, sometimes a lot of this stuff could be because so many people went there for so many years, it just kind of builds up and stays there.
Right. Paula's going to say something.
As they say, back on the Farrar School, it was an elementary school from 1972. Forward, before 1972, it was an actual full-fledged kindergarten through 12th grade all in one building. So.
Wow.
Yeah, because...
All the way to high school?
Yeah, because... Well, Deliz, you're out there in the suburban, and you don't have, like, the populated students as we do as in small cities and towns and stuff like that. So,
okay.
I mean, I looked up some of their graduating classes, and some of their graduating classes only had 13 people in it to graduate. So it's kind of like, you know, what was the number you graduated your class? Oh, I was number 9 out of 13. You know, it makes you wonder what your GPA could possibly be.
Lord. My high school graduating class of 3,000.
I wish mine was 3,000. Mine was 28 people.
I was like, I think I was 532, I think. 532 or 536, I don't remember.
I was a small class. But we had 156 in our class.
Our high school was huge.
I feel so small compared to you guys, man. Highland High School was a really rinky-dink high school when I was growing up. We had, I think, 30 people, 32 people in our class, and 28 of them graduated. So we were really, really small.
Yeah.
I'm a hillbilly.
Oh, man.
So that... My daughter's class, I think it was, what, 600?
I think so, yeah.
About 600, yeah. Class.
And listeners, so that you know, Paula's usually pretty precise about her history, even if she hasn't went to the school before many, many times. She digs in really, really deep. She spends a lot of time digging up a lot of things most people can't find. She's kind of specialized in that from time to time. Really, actually, yep. You surprised me several times on it because I have no idea where you come up with some of this stuff.
Called digging in the dirt, honey, digging in the dirt. And sometimes we have to get our nails dirty in order for us to find out the truth.
Yep. That is true.
Sometimes it's creepy basements in the courthouse room.
Yep, that too.
Oh, the nice little hidden basement areas where you've got filing cabinets out in 10 buck twos nowhere, and if you're really lucky, an old-fashioned computer sitting there, like in Mount Gaed here, where you got to dig all the way down into the bottom, go past 25 filing cabinets, and they got an old prehistoric computer in the corner.
Well, mine is go and climb up. Actually, you have to climb. It is the strangest thing of how our courthouse is built. You literally have to go to the basement and go into this secret little room. Hold on, he's climbing underneath. Trying to get around it. You have to actually go into the basement, go into this little room, and then this little room has a private staircase to a mystery room. And in the mystery room is these big, huge, gigantic books. I mean, you pick up one, and if you ever throw it, you will knock somebody out. They have all the deeds, and they have all the registries of anything of that term and effect. If you wanted to have a will or a birth certificate or a wedding certificate or something, you go back down to the main floor and they have the other set of big books.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in mine, but it reminds me of the X-Files. It's like this little hallway. It's got like 10 cabinets in it. Like I said, you go around the corner, you got this prehistoric computer that still has the, I don't even know what screen you would talk. It's one of those old green screens. You know those big, old, bulky-looking things?
Oh, yeah.
It's we got a small but ridiculously predominant Mount Gaed here. It's I have no idea how to explain it. Y'all will see it somewhere along the line. I'm sure I'll buy you dinner or something when you're up in Ohio. Let's talk a little bit about...
Kind of reminds me of middle school and then all those old computers. It kind of reminds you of the, it was all in one and you had the little teeny tiny screen.
You're talking about a Mac? Oh my God.
All I know is it was a little tiny screen. This is me being in seventh grade.
Yeah, it's a Mac.
And it was a teeny tiny screen.
It's a TV with a disk drive. That's a Mac.
Oh, no, this one was a floppy thing that you had to make sure you stuck in there. If you end up getting one little small lint on that thing, you were screwed.
Okay, that was an Apple IIe or something like that. Yeah, my freshman year in high school, oh, my God. We went into the computer lab, and they had a bunch of those Macintoshes. It looked like a TV with a disk drive. And then it got upgraded to an Apple II, I think it was, where it had two big diskette drives that were under it, and the monitor sits on top. Am I making myself
wow.
old? I think I am. Damn.
Let's talk a little bit about... We covered equipment. Actually, I'm going to pause for a minute just so everybody knows. Listeners, you're listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations here in the United States. I do encourage you, if you're going to go with a podcast or if you're going to go with the digital radio format, try to go with the best. Eventually, take a look at Donald and the crew here at BBS. They'll do wonderful for you. They're great guys. Other notations so that everybody is aware. There's several things going on this weekend in Tennessee. The National Bigfoot Conference is going to be out there. I apologize to anybody that may be listening tonight. I know that I got some backstage passes over there, and I was supposed to be there tonight. But unfortunately, with the incident that I had with the wife at the house here and catching up on business, it totally slipped my schedule. I absolutely apologize for not being there. I will touch base with the gentlemen and the ladies that invited me up, though, and we'll get something together to make sure that we get you back on the radio show. Generation Truth is actually doing a couple of things here. We're actually putting together the videos so that we can get our 12-piece documentary in, Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown. And one other team did make the cut. We actually interviewed 12 teams. We went out with six of those teams. Unfortunately, some teams just simply weren't good enough, where others, to be frankly honest with you, they didn't make the cut for legitimate reasons. However, we are going to use a lot of that to show you examples in the future, so I do want you to tune in to all 12 parts coming out in 2021 through 2023. It's going to be an excellent set of documentaries. It'll be at most of the cons. It'll also be at the film festivals, and I'm working out a few deals so that we can get bits and pieces of it on in a few other areas, but the key is to educate the public and show the paranormal culture the reality that's out there. We're listening to Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell here on Paranormal Truth and Reality, Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown, who is officially filming their fourth season here in a little while, and they've got their first season out on Amazon. They'll be bringing the second and third season out quite soon. So let's just kind of jump back into it a little bit. Guys, I know I've asked you a lot of questions, but I'm sure you've got a lot of things that you want to talk about. So what do you want to get off to the listeners, or really kind of express to the listeners about what you do, how you do it, and so forth?
Okay, we're just looking at each other going, huh? Usually she don't look dumbfounded like that, but oh my God. Wow. I would have to say be true to what you do. Do your research before you go to a location. And, of course, when you do go to a location, scout the whole area, make special notes of where all the hazards are, what is dangerous, what's sticking out of the ground, what's sticking out of the ceiling, sticking out of the walls, if there's glass all over the place. That way you can make a mental note of all the hazards before you go in at night so you don't hurt yourself. What?
Or a 5-gallon bucket of tar.
Shut up.
Well, that's a story I got to hear now.
Oh, God. All right. Back to the Farrar. While the basketball game was going on, Cheryl Fletcher came in. And we were like, showing her what happened and everything. Well, the game died down, so I'm assuming the game was over. We all went to the boiler room. So there was a bucket that was sitting in the hallway section of the back room of the boiler room, and she started doing talking about the principal, talking about the janitor. I put the Eddie on top of that bucket, and this bucket is empty, mind you. She started razzing the principal and just taunting the janitor, and I was using this other box that's put out by Rob Hernandez. It's called the RTC box 1 or something like that. And it basically was doing a sweep, and we were hearing, you know, names coming out of it, and it was getting angry at Cheryl. Well, on the eddy, you could see the geophone started flashing like somebody's coming toward it. And then the EMF on it just spiked and just went bright blue. I mean, it lit that hallway up. Well, at the time, Craig was using my camera, and I had another camera. So he was filming me with her doing the EVP session. Well, he went to go sit down on a bucket so he could actually, you know, keep us in frame and everything. And I was standing next to a door that's close to where they call the catwalk. And they said that they had some weird things happen inside that room. Craig gets up, walks away. We're still talking to Cheryl. And he's standing on the other side, getting us in frame in the front. Paula's sitting on a chair. Kenneth was there with his wife. She was running thermal. And all of a sudden, boom, real loud. I swore it came from behind the door where I was, where the catwalk was. First thing I thought was, run. I did. My shin slammed right into a 5-gallon bucket full of tar. I was a laughingstock that whole night. I mean, yeah, they felt sorry for me because I have like a hairline fracture, but they still say it's the funniest thing ever. And she's over here laughing. Shut up. Ain't funny. You shut up. Ain't funny.
It's amazing some of the things you get into when you're out there on investigations.
Oh, yeah.
And the deal is also, I know that when we go on investigations, you know you have to be serious. You have to be, you know, important about what you do, but you also know that we are human beings. I mean, sometimes it gets to the point you're there for 24 hours, 48 hours at a time.
Yep.
A little humor pops up every now and then. It's part of life, but we do take things very seriously. But we also are human beings who have to, you know, sometimes we have to take a chuckle to make our night go little bit more lively than others.
Oh, yeah. There's one that's really going to be a huge chuckle if it ever comes through. We are going to be investigating an adult bookstore.
Oh, fun.
Oh, yeah. Joe said that he's going to come back for that one, but he said straight up, there's just no way we're going to be able to keep our composure. Not cracked. And there's going to be a lot of blurring.
Yeah, you're going to have to blur out a good percentage of the sections you walk through.
Joe was like, I'm going to go ahead and take this box of Kleenex, and I'm going to go out into the little theater room.
We already made a joke about having a blow-up doll at base camp.
Yeah, we're going to have the blow-up doll at base camp, the one with the surprise look.
Well, you know, that's something nobody's ever done before, if you think about it. And there's no reason why it wouldn't have some sort of activity in it. I mean, it does have a consistent variety of people and situations coming and going on a regular basis. If it has any history on top of that, you never know what might happen.
In more ways than one.
That'd be a unique one to actually see, but you would have to do a lot of editing in that one. I will say that, because doing a porn store can't be easy.
No.
Well, I'm just curious, you know, when you're talking about the porn star, it makes me want to do a flashback on an old episode of Ghost Adventures.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, they should have done a bloopers episode, because I know they had to have bloopers in that one.
Oh, no, they ran, are you kidding? No, that scene where Ghost Adventures was at the bunny farm.
The bunny ranch.
And Zach is about to get in the bed. And he's like, Aaron, come in here and lay with me. And like two rooms down was Debbie Constantino and Mark Constantino. And they were in a room with the door shut. But yeah, Zach was like, Aaron, do you feel that? Come over here and lay on the bed with me and feel this. I was like, oh, my God. And they had it on YouTube. You know they got razzed for that for years.
But it's I'll bet you it was a fun investigation, though. I mean, the Bunny Ranch has a reputation of its own. It's been there for quite a number of years. It probably was just fun to go do.
But unfortunately, the owner of the Bunny Ranch is dead. He died, passed away a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So we tried to tell Joe, hey, there's your new job.
Well, if you think about it, it would be a unique place to investigate. I've always wanted to investigate. This sounds crazy, and listeners are going to laugh their butt off, but I would be more than game to go investigate the Playboy Mansion, not because it's the Playboy Mansion with all of the girls and everything that happened there, but because it's the Playboy Mansion, if that makes sense. It's had a lot of actors in it, a lot of stories in it, a lot of situations in it. I could bet you could probably pick something up just from that alone.
But wasn't the Playboy Mansion existed before Hugh Hefner bought it? I mean,
it did.
Wasn't it a funeral home?
I don't remember the whole story on it. I think it was it was either a funeral home or it was some sort of boarding home. I can't remember which. I know he pretty much ripped apart the whole inside and areas and retooled the whole thing, but it had a history before he bought it.
Yeah, because I'm thinking the building is almost 100 years old, if not older than that.
Could be.
Now he's just
He's going to the Playboy Mansion. I'm going too.
The bed that spins around and vibrates.
Nope, I'm going to jump on the trampoline.
I want to see the underwater cove. You know, you dive under the water and then you come back up into their little secret cove. That's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, that is true. Cool. Oh, man.
That's that, wasn't it? Some kind of designer that bought it?
I don't know. Well, at first, Hugh was living in the guest house.
He sold it, and he said that he was allowed to live there as long as he could. Mm-hmm. And of course, he passed away there. But I was trying to think. I think he's a designer or something, or a software designer or something.
An architect,
that
bought it.
Oh, was it? I
guess.
Remember.
I'd have to look now. Yeah, it's one of those things you see it on the news at the time, and then it just slips your head after a while.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And then we bring it up on a radio show. Isn't that lovely?
Well, I started talking about a porn store, and next thing you know, he goes, hey, I'm going to go investigate Hugh Hefner's house. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it would be an interesting investigation. I bet you it would take an arm and a leg to get on the list just to get into the place because it's so famous and so many people have been there. And, of course, now it's changed hands and a lot of other things I'm sure are going on with it. But it would be a very interesting investigation just to go do.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, we're slotted actually to go to California next year, so we're going to be doing some unique things. I'm hoping to get into a friend of mine's home because I've known him for a number of years, and then we've got a Hollywood Ranch bar that we're going to be doing out there with several people and a few other things. So it's going to be a fun little set of adventures just for the heck of it.
You got to make it to the Winchester house. And also Dave Omen house.
I intend to go to David's house. I need to work out the details with him. We've been talking about it for quite a number of years, and I'm really excited about that. And then we're going to team up with hopefully, if everything works out right, we're going to team up with Hollywood Ghost Hunters for a little while so they can show us a couple of their locations. And then a friend of mine, Joe Thompson, is actually going to show up, and he's going to take me through some of the local haunts. So should be a fun little game.
And then make a side trip to Vegas. You can go to the Haunted Museum.
Yeah, I'm going to go check out some of this stuff just for the heck of it and check out the Haunted Museum and a couple of the other more famous locations. I might even do a little historic piece there on Black Dahlia when I'm in California just for the heck of it and just have a little bit of a blast with it. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a good little vacation for 3 or 4 weeks. Plus, I'm going to meet with Donald, hopefully, and buy him a steak. I know he's listening right now, so he'll kind of giggle a little bit in the background.
Yeah, he's going to try to find you an adult bookstore to go investigate. I'm sure they got some out there in the Las Vegas Strip. Hustler.
Probably got 1,000 of them out there at the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, it's called the Strip.
Well, that rocks my have some haunted production companies.
I wouldn't know about that. What do you mean by haunted production companies?
Oh.
Scared the cat.
No, I mean, I know that out in California there's a couple of haunted studios. Desilu, well, it's not Desilu Productions, but what is it now?
I don't know.
Who bought Desilu out?
Warner Brothers?
Well, it might be Warner Brothers. All I know is one of the studios is nearly haunted, and there's been stories told that Desi Arnaz still walks the halls of the old Desilu warehouse.
Well, MGM and Paramount have got haunted stories all over their studios. So that'd be another fun one to do, actually.
Yeah. I would like to, well, I mean, I doubt they're haunted, but I would love to get into the sound stages in Universal.
Yeah, it would be interesting to, well, just to take a full tour of Universal outside of their nice little tour. I did their public tour, but it'd be nice to do the kind of behind the scenes thing where you get to go actually physically see the sound sets and you get to see maybe even some of the actors on stage and things like that. It'd be really cool.
Yeah, they only take you through the back lot. They let you go through a few of the facades. They take you to one sound stage, and you're only in there for maybe a good 10 minutes, and that's it. And the whole thing, it costs $375 each.
If that, because the sound stage we went to, they kind of quickly walked us through everything and said, okay, this is the sound stage, this is that, this is that, this is that. Okay, let's go.
There's a big elephant doors, and now we're going to leave. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and my times of being in movies, I've been on maybe 3 sound stages. So I know what they look like. I know how they get totally filled with sets. So, I mean, just sitting there watching them. Plus, also, I've been in sound stages where they filmed TV shows. I've watched Silver Spoons get filmed live. What else did I see? Gosh. What was the other one I told you I saw filmed live?
I don't
know. No. Okay.
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I slept.
Oh, well, okay. But yeah, I've seen a lot of TV shows get filmed and been on the sound stages. I mean, as you know, I've been in Sony's pictures, Country Strong, with Tim McGraw and Gwen Paltrow. Actually, me and Santiago were in the same movie.
Cool. He just finished a movie. I can't remember what it is for the life of me. I was just talking to him about it. It looks kind of cool, though. He plays a mercenary in a horror film.
Oh, Illuminati or something like that?
Something like that. I'd have to look up the name.
Yeah. Country Strong, Santiago was a photographer, and I was Leighton Meester's roadie.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough gig being an actor. I feel for him sometimes. I know he's got to go from one to another, and he's got a lot of auditions to do, but he's a phenomenal actor, so he'll always jump out and get some role somewhere.
See, that's how you can tell that we don't act on our show, because I'm a horrible actor. I mean, there is no acting in our show, because if there was, I'd be an actor, but I am a horrible actor. And people sometimes complain about that on our reviews. They're like, he doesn't know what he's doing. Looks like he's horrible. Okay, well, I'm not an actor. I'm a real person. I'm doing this investigation as it comes to me. Whatever I see, the viewer sees. Whatever I hear, the viewer hears. So whatever is happening right then and there, I'm actually part of it. There is no acting. Because, well, you know, what are you going to say?
Well, you know, that's the difference between some reality TV when you're dealing with paranormal and other reality TV. I've spent the past 6 to 8 years digging in really, really deep. And there are some shows like yourself and other shows that are 100% legitimate. You go out there, you do your thing, you get something or you don't get something. Sometimes you think you've got something when you're there, but then you go back and find out you didn't get anything. And then there are a handful that use tricks of the trade. Now, though I won't reveal those tricks of the trade, I have learned some of those tricks of the trade. I have been told some of those tricks of the trade from some fairly well-known people throughout the years, and I've watched a few of them get put together, and they have been handed down throughout this to other people, some of which are still on TV. And when I say this, listeners, I don't want you to get the wrong impressions. I have a lot of respect for anybody that has a TV show. It is not easy going on TV, whether you're 100% reality-based and you know it's 100% real, or whether you're staging things. It is still not easy to keep the watchers into the ratings and do what you do. So I have a lot of respect for anybody that goes out there. But I have more respect for people that go out there and keep it 100% reality-based. And there are some shows that take great pride in that. There are other shows that will tell you they take great pride in it when they don't at all, just so listeners are aware. Either way, it makes good TV. And if you're going to work hard at it, good for you. But I prefer to stick around with the people that that are honest about it.
And let's not forget, we do everything. This is our process. We show up at the location. We unload the trailer. We set up base camp. We get all the cameras ready for our interviews. We get everything ready for the walkthrough. We get the B-roll. We get the drone in the air. Once all that stuff is done, we go back and continue with building base camp. The DVR cameras go ahead and get set up. And then when it comes dusk, we get all the night vision cameras ready and the recorders going. And then we go in and start investigating. We do it all. We don't have a B crew to come down and set everything up for us. We do everything. And you've seen it. We took over the entire Ohio State Reformatory cafeteria or their break room.
Both. You had equipment lined up through the cafeteria all the way into the break room.
Yeah, we had to get it out of we had to get it out of that kitchen, though.
Yeah. You brought I think you brought out everything. Of course, you didn't use all of it, but nevertheless, you had it all there. It was an amazing bunch of equipment. And let's not even get into post town. You could barely walk through that.
Well, I mean, here's the deal. I bring everything because, you know, like Joe says, less is best. To an extent, yes, that is correct, and that is a good idea. But what happens if you're out there filming and the drone don't work? You want to get some somewhat aerial shots. Oh, well, I have a 22-foot jib, but I left it at home. Or, you know, this would be an awesome shot to have a slider. I guess I have to do it by hand because the slider's at home. I don't want to go through any of that. I want to be able to just go out to the trailer. Oh, cool. I can grab the slider. I can grab the motorized slider. I can grab the jib. I've got the drone. I've got the Steadicam. You name it, I got it. I can use it at my disposal. Yes.
Well, I got to tell you, from doing mostly handheld stuff here, it would be a lot more convenient to have that stuff handy than not, because there have been times, for instance, Waverly, the second set of people that we were with were very kind, and they're going to give us some of the drone footage. In order for me to get the upper footage, I had to climb, and of course I have my bad leg, I had to climb all the way up that tower in the back. You know the tower in the back of Waverly where you got that little walk ladder that they can put you on? I had to go all the way up there to try to get a decent upper shot because everything was from the ground.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Waverly about killed me. I had people ask me about that. They're like, so I know you take a lot of stuff. How did you feel about Waverly? I'm like, it about killed me. I only could take, you know, a few things here and there. And heck, we covered two tables full when we were at Waverly, but still, it wasn't all the stuff I wanted, so I had to make do. And plus, also, we only had 5 hours per team, like we were discussing earlier today. We had full 10 hours. Normally, Waverly is only 8 hours, but we got 10 hours. We were there from 6 p.m. and had to leave by 4 a.m. And I didn't have any of my stuff. Mainly, I had my two 4K cameras. I had my Canon. I had all my devices, the Periscope, the Periscope 360, the Eddy, the Ovilus, the Spirit Box. No shoulder rigs, no none of that stuff. It was just bare minimum. That's it.
Well, the last time I was there, we got lucky enough to get roughly around the 10 hours, even though it was originally supposed to be 8 hours. And I got to tell you, with as big as the place was, technically there were two teams, technically, although I was filming for the team to do the documentary. So it's, well, we did a little bit of investigation on our own, but not a lot. We still couldn't cover but a quarter of the place. I mean, there were a lot of things that just, you got to go two or three times if you're a team. It's almost impossible, even if you have a full 10 hours, to cover that place, right?
Oh, we did pretty darn good. We covered the entire building. Everybody got to go to each floor. We did it within 5 hours, each team. Yeah, we covered that place. We did the death tunnel. We did first floor, second floor, third floor, fourth floor, fifth floor. Yeah, we did it all. The only thing that we did not do was go on the back side or the front side where the nurse fell to her death, where there's a statue, and the cemetery. We didn't get a chance to do that because they're not going to allow you out there after night. Yeah. Because there's a drop. So if you don't look where you're going, down you go.
Yeah, it's not a safe place if you don't know the area fairly well. It's very easy to have an accident.
Yep. But I would love to have drones.
Believe it or not, guys, we're about in the closing of the show because we've spent almost an hour sitting here talking. So let's talk about where the audience can find you and where they can search for your websites and so forth so that they can keep an eye on Paranormal Journeys and what you're doing in the future.
All right. Well, you can find us at www.phantasmicghosthunters.com, and that's with a P, not an F. You can also find us at www.intheshadowsentertainmentgroup.com. That's our production company. You can find us on Facebook just by searching Gavin Kelly. You can search for Paula Purcell. You can search for the Phantasmic Ghost Hunters, Paranormal Journey, In the Shadows Entertainment. We are all over Facebook. We're all over social media. You can go to find us on Twitter, Instagram, and also we have our own podcast that comes out every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. called the Phantasmic Journey Podcast, and you can check that out. We've got some really cool guests coming up, like October 24th, we're going to have Shannon Byers. October 31st, we're going to have David Milby. Jumping to November, we're going to have Sherry Debonetti from Ghost Hunters. November 14th, we're going to have Daylin Lorenzo from Ghost Brothers. November 21st, we're going to have Stephanie Bingham. And December looks like it's going to be the Tennessee Race Chasers, because December 5th, we're going to have Doogie. And on December 12th, we're hopefully going to have Scott Porter. And if you guys like country music, well, I have a country music station. You can wake up with me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. on WGKC, and that is on your radio station, the WGTC or something, or WGT?
WCGT. Radio Live, broadcast here in Ohio, and it's on Live 365, so pretty easy to find.
Yep. So if you like country music, you can listen to me DJ on there. Also, the reason why I put that together is because I'm playing a mainstream country music. Also, it allows indie artists to allow me to play their radio-ready hits. So what a better way to get the indie artists to actually get their music out there, because it's a tough business to get on the real AM and FM. So this is a better way for them to get their stuff heard. Let's see what else we got. Events. We're going to be at SilCon next year. It's September, 6th and 7th?
I think it's the first week in September.
Yeah. First weekend in September 2019. We're going to be at SilCon. We are the headliners there. So come on out and see us. We'll be the one with the biggest boost in the middle of the convention.
Also, we'll have a red carpet event there, too.
We're going to have a red carpet there?
Yeah.
For the release of
the trailer.
Oh. Oh, we should actually have season 2.
No, we're talking about the
Oh, we're going to have a red carpet event there for the trailer of the movie Lucy that we're currently filming right now with GK Films and, of course, our production company, In the Shadows Entertainment Group. We've been working on filming a movie called Lucy, which deals with a history
of a couple of patients.
There you go.
At St. Albans, I end up turning in a couple of patients into a character of a movie. And basically, I study, you know me, Chris, I do my background research very thoroughly, and I basically contacted the family, got some of the diary entries, some stories about their loved ones and how they obtained getting to St. Albans, and I'm doing the backstory of them and before they went to St. Albans. And then, of course, we'll do a few little things that in the movie once they had received, you know, being at St. Albans. But this is basically the backstory that led them to St. Albans.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to go ahead and email us, you can email us at phantasmicghosthunters@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to BBS Radio. We've been talking to Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell from Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown. Keep in mind everything that they mentioned to you. We'll also be throwing the links up on BBS, so you'll actually see some of the links on where to find them. It'll also be on my Facebook page a little later on so that you know where to find everything. BBS is one of the largest digital radio stations here in the United States of America. Again, if you're thinking about a podcast or a radio show somewhere along the line, make sure that you talk to Donald. He'll take very good care of you. Next week and through the following month, Paranormal Truth and Realities, actually in November and December, we're going to have some pretty exciting guests ourselves. We're going to have a few people from, believe it or not, the History Channel. I've actually got a couple of people lined up that were on. They're not on currently. Well, some of them are on as guest stars every now and then through the Discovery Channel and several other major television shows. I do want you to tune in for those. Some of them are very interesting people. A few of them have some college professor backgrounds. We also have, of course, obviously, the regular investigators and a few investigators from places like Ghost of Shepherdstown and so forth that will be popping in and out. You've been listening to BBS Radio, Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm going to end this the way I do every single time, just so that everybody knows. Most of you listeners are pretty familiar with it. Those of you not, you're going to hear a nice canned statement here that I tell everybody every week. Remember, in the paranormal, truth should always be that reality. What you learned tonight is, not every investigator is scripted. Not every investigator on TV or on Streamline TV or otherwise is an actor. Some people are just normal people like you and I. They're doing the passion, and they deserve respect for what they do. So keep that in mind when you're on social media. Keep that in mind when you're watching the television shows and so forth, because their jobs are not hard, ladies and gentlemen, or not easy, ladies and gentlemen, is what I'm trying to say. It's very, very hard. So keep that in mind. Pat them on the back for the hard work they do, and understand that every time they're out there, they're not only sacrificing a lot of time, paychecks, time, money, and resources, even when they get paid for it in the long run to go on television, but they're really trying to work at giving you something not only to entertain you, but something that you can enjoy and they can enjoy in return. I'll let you off of here. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.